Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm speaking to Kevin Harron about the art and science of leading organizational change. As Chief Product and Technology Officer at Enpact, Kevin has driven massive transformations, doubling the customer base and scaling SaaS assets under management from $50 billion to over $100 billion. But as we discuss today, the biggest challenge in change management isn't the processes, it's the people. We will talk about how to overcome resistance, build trust, and make change stick. Whether you're leading a startup pivot or overhauling a legacy system, this episode is packed with lessons from hard-won experience in leading organizations through disruptive change. I'm Adam Horner, and as a coach for CTOs, I help tech leaders break out of the cycle of constant firefighting and step into the kind of leadership that drives real, lasting change. Through my work with CTOs and startups and enterprises, I focus on helping leaders build confidence, delegate effectively, and shift from reactive problem solving to proactive strategic decision making. It's about moving beyond just keeping the lights on and becoming a respected, trusted executive. This podcast is where I bring together the best insights, strategies, and playbooks for CTOs who want to level up, whether from my own experiences or the hard-earned lessons of my guests. Each episode is packed with actionable advice to help you lead with impact. Kevin, it's wonderful for you to join us. I'm really looking forward to some of your insights from today. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to have this conversation, and hopefully it's as insightful as some of your other guests and sessions have been. Yeah, so I'm excited.
That's awesome. Cool. Let's see how we go with it. Now, you've got one of these distinctions, which I love coming out with numbers. They're just impressive. But Enpact, where you're working at the moment, you managed to double the customer base and what's called the SaaS assets under management from 50 to 100 billion dollars. I really have to read that twice to get it. That's an epic transformation. How did that come about?
It's one of those things that it came about hard work with the team. When I was brought in to transform the org, it had a lot of potential kind of store up that just needed some execution. I give all the credit to the teams, and we're able to do that by cutting down implementation times, speeding up the support times so that the execution just in general could go faster and we can onboard quicker and word of mouth spread. In that time, we also acquired some additional products through an acquisition that gave us a little more as well. And so I give all the credit to the teams because it was really an effort on their part to just take us to the next level.
And was it one of those sort of change programs where it is the accumulation of many small additions that add up over time? Or was there one big chunk that you needed to get out of the way in order to create real change?
Absolutely. There's always things that are easily visible that you can attest to. But yeah, just like you said, it's a lot of little things. And that's good and bad. But the good is that you get all these little wins and it gets wind in your sails and the teams build up this, hey, this is all this work we're putting in, it's doing something, let's go tackle the next thing. And so I find that's much easier on transitions than working for 6 months, even though we had some of those projects, or longer, to get this one big thing out the door that's going to change everything.
Yeah.
Because even at that, those kind of projects, you don't see very rarely do you ever see the result quickly. These big projects that are going to make a difference, you work a year on them. It's not like in the first week you're going to get all the results back. It's going to take a while for that momentum to build up. And so it could be a little long for the team. It's easy to get discouraged.
I worked on a change that was about 2 years long, replacing an entire platform from the inside out, the classic strangler fig approach to it. And that was one of the challenges, actually, was keeping momentum going when things were getting tough. When you were doing this big change, were there any moments where you thought, this isn't going to work?
You know, there's always times of questioning, hey, are we doing the right things? Especially in one of the biggest projects was when I got there, there were some legacy applications that needed to be moved to a traditional SaaS model. And those are never easy because as much as the product, and you can have people who were there from day one, they've been working on it for years and there's things they've forgotten. And all of a sudden you're 3 months in, they're like, oh, I totally forgot about X, Y, and Z, even though it was well planned and things like that. So yeah, you get to those, you get to those points and you start thinking, this can is open, and you start, you question, but I always try to stay positive. And again, once the can's open, it's not really, there's no, usually no going back. So have to get on with it. You're like, this is where we're going. Let's muddle through and make it happen.
Yeah. Surprise pops out. You just got to keep pushing through and just barge them out of the way sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so in terms of the changes that you were making then, was there a lot of people changes as well as process changes, as well as technology changes? Were you changing everything across the board? Or was there a sort of a focus on one particular kind of change as you went through?
This is always a, not funny, but interesting, because the impact had been around for 10-ish years, and then there was a private equity buyout. And so that's when I was brought in to partner with the CEO to make this transformation. And so when asked about it, I always have to give a caveat, because when you hear PE buyout and transformation, that usually sounds like, hey, we're going to come in and lay everybody off and that kind of thing. It was nothing of that nature. So yes, it was change in people, in the processes, in the products, and the three big P's. And those are always interesting. And as with all your experience, yeah, there's a lot about the technology, but at the end of the day, what falls to you is a lot of change management and strategy. And that was the bulk of what I was dealing with on this one.
Yeah, because what I always find is when you're trying to change processes, it's fairly straightforward. Often you put a process in place and convince people, logical arguments often win the day, that works fairly fine. And then when you try and get the people to change the processes, there's sort of two levels of agreement. You get that first level where it's, yeah, that looks good. That's in theory. That's great. Oh, wait, I have to change. And that's when you hit the really big resistance.
Exactly. And especially when you're the new guy coming in and people are already on guard and they have their way of doing things. And who are you to come in and tell them there's a better way of doing it? And it's a delicate thing. And that's when I know it's a big topic and maybe overused, maybe underused. I don't know. That's where things like EQ and things of that nature come into play. And because you can lose your teams very quickly if you don't handle it properly.
Yeah. And so reading the room and understanding where the emotions are, and is today the day to announce the big change, or should I wait until people are not quite so fragile? And
absolutely. Absolutely. Because you can have the greatest ideas in the world and the best intentions of the world, but you can lose them in the first week just by the way you handle it.
Yeah. And when you've got one of those situations to come in and change things, you mentioned it before, laying people off. It's often one of those images that people have. I always blame that movie Up in the Air, where the guy, it was George Clooney, wasn't he? Flies around the country just laying people off. Do you have sort of stories of that where you have to go in and change teams up quite a bit, change people out quite a bit? Because it's one of those areas of change which people find the most emotively triggering because people are losing their jobs.
Absolutely. I would say that is the worst part of my job. And it's something that it's obviously uncomfortable for new managers, but it's a reality that when you go into leadership, that's just part of it. And the way I approach these types of things, especially going into a new situation, is I never act quickly on those things, period. But especially going into these types of situations, because you never have complete information. And first, I'm going to make sure I know the whole story of why people are where. Beyond that, I always try to find a place for somebody before I go to letting somebody go.
Move them around the organization, basically.
Absolutely, right. Because here's the deal with that, a transformation situation. One, laying off anybody, especially early, is going to instantly kill morale, because everybody else is going to start thinking, hey,
when am I?
Yeah, what am I next? the second thing is, those people typically, or not always, they've probably possibly been with the company a long time, so they have a lot of domain knowledge. They might have a lot of relationships. Maybe you're not seeing the value in the position that they're currently in, but that doesn't mean they don't have great value to the company. And so being able to find another place for them, beyond the human element of you never want to put somebody in a bad situation, I always try to find a place for somebody. Beyond that, that doesn't work. I always try to look and say, hey, what are we not doing as an organization to make you successful? Is it, is it me, not you? I try to go through that exercise. And at the end of the day, though, if it doesn't work out, here's the thing. You can't make other team members pay the price for the fact that somebody else is working out. Yes, it's sad for that person, but all the other team members shouldn't have to pick up the weight or deal with some problem simply because that person's not working out. And with that, I try to give people runways out the door. If I think it's an amicable situation, I let them know early on, hey, I don't think this is going to work out. And that is 99.9% of the time has worked out for me. And they've been appreciative. I've given them a little time to start looking for something else. And they've been very helpful going out the door. And I've kept good relationships with those people.
Yeah, I have to say, I've had the same experience. Often when you find somebody who you've just don't fit in the right way in the right organization, if you help them get to a better place, yes, it's an uncomfortable transition. But as you say, if it's done with tact, with respect, and with time, somebody can land in a much better place as a result of it. So it's not always the most uncomfortable thing you have to go through. But I have to say, the very first time I had to go through that process, I was very lucky. I had a senior manager who'd been doing it for many years. And he basically told me, okay, this is going to be hard. This is going to be a tough meeting. And it genuinely was for me at that time. But then in hindsight, it was one of the easier ones I ever did. Because the first one, I think, is always just, it's just jarring. You feel like you're just uprooting somebody. But let's look at the positive side of change. Because I think there are, when you get to do change like this, you often end up with areas of, or pockets of growth within the organization as well in order to make that happen. Now, clearly, you must have had some fairly large growth areas of the organization to more than double assets under management. So what were some of the biggest changes in size and scope as you went through?
Absolutely. The thing with looking at change when you come in, it can be dangerous, much like we were discussing earlier. Besides putting people on their guard, sometimes the most obvious things you want to change aren't the best things. Sometimes the things you want to, you know, start working on aren't the best things to start messing with. So what I typically like to do, I start with pain points. So out of the list of things that I see need to be changed, I start with things that I think they're going to see and go, hey, that just made my life easier. Mm-hmm. So it makes them more accepting to the other things that are come down the line. So it might be little things like some kind of, in the tech world, it might be some kind of transition to a new DevOps process or something of that nature, because engineers are weird because they have their little, like anybody, they have their little routines and they get in their little way of working. But once you can get over those little humps and they see that, hey, this is going to make my life better, then they're positioned to be more accepting to the things you're going to bring on board.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's also that thing where you sometimes look at a change and think, oh, it's going to be great. I'll make this change. And then it absolutely flops and completely bails. I had one situation like that. I promoted somebody into a leadership role. You know, we'd spoken about it beforehand. He was up for it, really thought it'd be a great idea. And then 2 months in, he came to me and he gave me those dreaded words, "We have to talk." We went into a meeting room and he's basically, "I'm not happy. I can't do this job. I hate leading people. It's too much stress." And I'd actually pivoted quite a lot of the organization around that one change and then had to undo it again. If you had changes that you thought, this is a no-brainer, and then realized, oh, no, it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Similarly, usually it's around people and the acceptance of that change. But the way I've always handled those is just to try to be as honest as possible with the teams without putting that person in a bad situation. Like in your situation, go in and say, hey, this isn't working out, not because he's not doing a great job. He just feels he can be more helping the team in his old position or in this position. So we're gonna try something new.
Yeah.
Something else in bringing on these changes, and I'd love to hear your experience with this, is I always try to involve the teams in getting their feedback before we do something. And the hard part here is you want everybody to feel involved, but you don't want everybody to feel like, hey, if I don't like it, it's not going to happen kind of thing. And so that's always a hard line, but I try to always involve teams and get feedback, because there's ideas, like I was mentioning earlier, you don't have the history, so you might think there's a great idea, but they can tell you five reasons why it's a horrible idea. So what's your experience in that?
Yeah, I think I've got an interesting twist on that as well, in that I've done changes across different cultures from different places. I think there's this balance between, I think this is what you're describing, between consensus and just straightforward authority, where some people think they've got a veto, or where some people think that there has to be a complete agreement before change is going to go ahead and happen. Whereas in reality, there is an element of sort of executive exertion of control, which has to happen. And that right. balance, I find, is very different. So in the UK, for example, you can get about 50% agreement on something, and then bang, you can go ahead and make that change, no problem at all. I tried to do the same thing here in Sweden shortly after I arrived, and I realized, nah, you've got to have much closer to 100% consensus before change. Like, you've got to have permission to make the change, otherwise you'll end up with this organizational resistance where they just don't want the change. So I found that there's some differences and elements like that, which are different across different countries, cultures and different places. But then also different kinds of companies in the same place. So working in the US on the West Coast, I found that even amongst startups, because I coach a few over there at the moment as well, you'll find that some startups are just very, okay, we've had an idea, execute, go, make the change. And others are much more, had an idea, let's sit on it for a little while. Let's just check it's the right thing to do. Let's talk to a few folks first. Let's ask the investors. And then we'll make the change. And it depends from person to person, but also from industry to industry, where some industries just much bigger impact of making a risky change, and others go for it. The impact is going to be minimal.
Absolutely. No, you brought up a great point. Actually, two great points. One, if there's situations where if you have enough people on board with it, then you have these missionaries that kind of, they go out and like, hey, their excitement for the change can thread through the rest of the team. Another experience I had, a huge technology decision, we had an impact. And I have some leaders I was speaking to across the board, and I brought them in and I wanted to get all their input on it. And the thing that I wanted to impart to them was, hey, at the end of the day, I want all your input, but I'm going to make this decision, and I'm not getting your input so that if this goes wrong, I can start blaming people. I'm getting your input because I want your input. And if this goes wrong, it's on me. It's at the end of the day, the buck stops with me. And I think that's important. I think that letting people know that you don't have some ulterior motive in getting their input, because unfortunately, I've worked with people like this. They're looking for ways to, if things go sideways, they have somebody to blame.
Whereas I think that's a really important point. As a leader, the buck stops with you, as you said, is the accountability and taking that and declaring it up front to create a kind of safer environment for people to be able to just share openly. I think that's a really good point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When it comes to, you go into an organization in the first place, you discover all these things, you think, oh my goodness, there's this catalog of things I need to change across the board. How do you go from that bag of stuff you want to change to a prioritized list? Okay, we're going to start here and work down the list. How do you work out what's the sort of the first bit of change that you have to do?
And this is where moving the pieces around, a lot of people find it overwhelming. I enjoy it because in a situation like this, it was almost like a startup because we're rebuilding so many things. And so wow. You come in and you're speaking with the CEO that has his priorities, and we hired some technology leadership and they see all these things they want to do. And you have, like you said, this list from multiple lists from all these people. And so you have to balance all that. And so at the end of the day, if the teams aren't functioning, no priority matters. So again, I started with things that I thought they would benefit from. And then from there, moved on to items that after a little confidence is built that I knew would make some big differences, not only to the movement of the technology projects, but the confidence in that the CEO had in me and the teams that further decisions we're going to be making were the right decisions. Because they need to know that, hey, when I say this thing you want to do, we can't do that right now. They need to have confidence that I'm just not being a no man. I'm making that call for a reason. And it's so much of it is just building a rapport and confidence up and down the chain.
Yeah, that's exactly how I thought it was. It's almost like you're paying into the trust bank first. So you've Absolutely. Got that trust in place. You can use that as capital leverage later on rather than trying to go, hey, just trust me, which is always, I think, a dangerous thing for any leader to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And because it's one of those things, if you lose it, it's twice as hard to get back if you can. And so, no, absolutely.
Yeah, that trust, I always call it the asymmetric currency. It's so much easier to spend it than it is to bank it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree.
And when it comes to change, I always find that we talked about how easy it is to change things and processes. People are the hard bit, and often find that's about turning a strategy into a story, a narrative, something that's compelling, but also that actually aligns. So you can say, okay, look, this is how it fits together from the high level vision all the way down to how it affects you and your role and what you're doing. Do you have an approach to that you use again and again, or is that one of those ones where you did it by instinct?
A lot of it is by instinct. Even at Impact, we do KPIs and all that. Those are great. They're typically not very inspiring. and this is, you're bringing up an important point. In the life cycle, and I know you discussed this before, in the life cycle of companies and in the different types of companies, you need different types of leaders. Mm. In situations like this, you need somebody who can sell the dream and cast the vision. And you need, again, when you have these people going through all this change, they need to believe things are going to get better. They need to believe the hopes you have about the company are going to come true. Again, you've built that trust, and so now you can sell the dream. Hey, this is what we're going for, and it's going to be great, and this is what it's going to mean to you, and this is how it's going to make your life better and more fulfilling, and you're going to meet your career goals. And being able to give them ownership of that dream is what gets them through a lot of those hard bumps when things are breaking, and this release that's supposed to go out on Friday just hit a major roadblock, and somebody submitted something, and all the red lights started coming on, and everybody's dashboards started freaking out. Yeah, that's my experience with that. What about you?
I think it's often about setting an idea of how the journey is going to go. So I think sometimes you have a bit of an idea. Okay, it's going to, in some cases, it's steadily improving. We can see lots of small incremental changes we can make. It's just going to get better. And other times you look at it and you go, okay, look, we're going to have to go underwater before we come up on the other side of this.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think most of the time, most teams fear that, okay, it's going to be all underwater for a long time and maybe a little gasp of air at the end of it, rather than this idea that, okay, we've got one big dunk and then we'll end up on the other side of this obstacle, having got it out of the way, and we'll be in, you know, a much better place. And I think if you can match the story and the narrative to what actually happens, at least in the first third of the journey, then you gain trust and leeway for the next two thirds of it to be even potentially quite far off what you hoped it would be, what you predicted it would be. It's that first bit where you have to say, okay, this is what's going to happen in the first bit. I always find that is, especially when you're new in and you have, as you said, low trust, low credibility, because you're just new. They've got you a blank sheet of paper as far as they're concerned, that you need to get that first bit fairly well predicted and fairly right. You can be wrong quite a bit after that, I find.
Absolutely. And that's where experience comes in. And I think I was speaking to somebody the other day about this, the way I explained it to them, they're asking about technology as it applies to C-level and opposed to other places of the hierarchy. And what I told them was, as a C-level, you need technology experience, and it's more about that than technology skill set. Yeah, I stay up on things and all that good stuff, but it's my experience I draw from. And so just like you were saying, when you're telling them, hey, this first third, this is how it's going to go, and then it magically goes like that because you've seen it before, again, it builds a ton of trust that, hey, this is going to be okay. You brought up something interesting, and it's something that it's like many things when you're dealing with leadership is, when I was speaking about selling the dream, I think it's important to emphasize that it's not about roses and unicorns. You have to be realistic. You have to let them know that, hey, this thing, it's going to be hard. Not only, again, from your experience and you understand the technology, yeah, you might not be able to go through and do it yourself, but the real is they being real with them and letting them know that, hey, this is not going to be easy and there's going to be problems and it's going to be a headache and it's going to be a slog to a lot of this. I think that goes a long way, again, with trust, because if you're just painting this great picture, and then they're doing all this hard work, they think you're totally out of touch.
Yeah. Yeah. And I often find that from people who are very early into change management, because this whole thing about getting it right comes from experience. Experience comes from getting it wrong.
Absolutely.
And so unless you've been through a bunch of changes and had those hard knocks and the weird lessons and the Friday night fails, unless you've been through that, you don't really have the credibility. You tend to paint a rosy picture unintentionally, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's that's one of those things.
Necessarily.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things about teaching people how to take organizations through change is, mm-hmm. is exactly that. It's about being able to say, okay, remember that it's going to fail. Tell them it's going to fail. And that gains a trust when it does fail. Ironically, they trust you more when it does fail when you said it would.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic point. And it's something I drill in very early when I come into an organization.
Right.
I tell them, hey, we're going to fail. And if we don't fail, that means we're not moving forward. We're not making progress. And we just need to learn, pick ourselves up, and move on. It's going to happen. And that's everything from predicting how a small project's going to go to somebody pushing the wrong code. A kind of grace and understanding goes a long way.
And do you find that sort of helps you when you get to that point of people eventually get to the end of the amount of change that they can cope with? Sometimes we call it burnout. Sometimes we call it change fatigue, but it's all basically the same thing. I get to the point where it's just, I've had enough, too much. And when it gets to that point, you basically have to manage these people quite carefully, because often the ones who go first, the ones who are the critical ones for the organization, because they're the people who say yes to too much. So suddenly they can't say yes anymore. And how do you end up managing that point when it gets critical with key people?
Great topic. Great point. Yeah. I find myself sometimes, generally, your VPs or your directors, they typically have less experience. And again, they see these things, they want to change, and they want to go at it like a lion. I find myself having to be the throttle a little bit. And that comes down to having my hand on the pulse of what's going on as much as I can, and talking to the teams and making myself available. And once again, drawing from that experience and going, hey, we just did this huge thing over here. Let's not change anything for the next month. And yeah, I want to get going on the next thing as much as you, but we've got to slow down. And if we do push too hard and we hear about that fatigue, I have no problem pulling back and going, okay, let's take a break, and being transparent with the folks. Hey, we're going to take a little break. We're going to rest with this. And sometimes there's side benefits from that. You burn in some of these changes and you learn some things.
And I think that was one of the key things I was going to come on to, is making change stick. I think I find time and again, if you don't have those pauses in the rate of change, has a habit of regressing. Like, you push forward in one area and another area starts regressing another thing moves forward. Whereas, as you say, if you end up with, okay, let's have a change freeze, which often people feel, oh, we've done something wrong, we're not allowed to change stuff now. But actually, it's more about embedding the current status quo so you don't slip back any further.
Absolutely, because it's easy. That's a great point, because it's easy when you start, when you get all these balls in the air, it's easy for someone to start dropping. And you might make progress in one area, and you get your eye off the ball, and this thing up here is falling apart. Great one.
And it's when you've come to the point of having made a bunch of changes, what is it about those changes in terms of the sort of the point where you celebrate success? Because one of the things I find with high-performing leaders is they'll go, yep, change, they'll keep pushing through, keep making more changes. And they're always looking and going, oh, what do we change next? What's the next bit that's messed up that we need to do? And often forget to just stop and go, hey, look how we come, folks. Let's go and have a beer to celebrate, or let's go and have some cake to feel good about the achievements that we've made. Because all too often, we're those kinds of people are thinking, what's the next thing to fix?
No, that's a great point. This is how I handle that. Beyond, we're fully remote, and so
right.
I'm very intentional about flying around and spending time with the teams and celebrating wins. Two things I did. I highlighted the success internally to the technology teams in a way they obviously understand what they've done, and show appreciation either just through a massive email or on hands or something like that. But more than that, I would send out mass email to the whole company. And what's important about that is I'm not going to tell them, hey, we did this super technical thing, because it's just going to go over their head. Not because they're not intelligent, but just it means nothing to them. But I like, hey, we just did this thing, and this is what it's going to mean to you. This is why it's going to be so great to the company. And what ends up happening, not only do they feel proud and have ownership of that change, they get appreciation from other departments or units in the company, because those folks begin to see, hey, what you're doing over there is making my life better. It's making it easier to sell. It's making it easier to support. And so that appreciation comes back on them. So it's all about communication and framing.
Yeah, communication is one of those things where you can get it right with just a few words, and you can get it wrong with silence so many times.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, you can get some wins under your belt. And if you push on to the next thing and your teams are left there going, well, what about these six things we just accomplished? And they feel like I'm unappreciated. So yeah, celebrating those wins, again, I like them when they're small, is so important.
And so once you've got a lot of change in place, you've made a lot of changes, how do you know when to stop?
That's a hard one. There's a point where you have to go, this is good enough to meet the need to accomplish the goals of the business. And are we going to do additional changes because we know there's something better out there, or because there's some shiny object, or for our own personal satisfaction? Are we changing because it's going to make life better and the business is going to meet a business need? I think that's the critical place that so many people meet. They just lose the forest for the trees, and they change for change sake is a horrible thing. Change for change sake, change for because there's one thing out there that's 1% better, can be so detrimental. So yeah, I think you have to keep your eye on, again, all those things across the board. Are we meeting the needs, or is it making lives easier? And once you hit that point, then you have to go, okay, let's let it be.
Let it be. That's good. Great Beatles song as well.
Exactly. Let it be.
We've gone through quite a lot of the different areas of change. Are there any of the sort of the significant change factors that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
The only thing, and this varies, I think something that might be important to highlight is, and all these other things are parts of it, is the culture. And it's one of the hardest things to change. And you can come in and, as an outsider, it's easier for you to identify some of those problems that people have become okay living with. And I think it's vital that you take the opportunity to make sure the culture is aligning not only with what you're doing as a company and the values of the company, but this is a personal thing for me. I'm a big culture guy. I'm having a positive culture that, you know, that people are happy to show up to be involved in every day. And I think it's a hard one, and it's one of those things that takes little pieces at a time, but I think it's so valuable and something that leaders need to be aware of.
Yes, I think that is one of those things that is, you can see the difference between really successful change management, where there is a culture and approach to that change. It's a deliberate thing that's curated in an organization. And those where change is a little, it feels haphazard, it feels indiscriminate to the people who experience it, when there isn't a deliberate culture around the change. I remember going into an organization, one of the first organizations where I heard the expression developer experience. And I heard it not because they were particularly great at it, but because they'd made a deliberate effort and attempt to create a good developer experience as part of their process, because that's how they created the culture of engineering. And as they improved that, that was their way at the beginning of getting those first wins that gained the trust that enabled the launching of the harder changes later on. But it starts with that idea of, let's have this culture of how we're going to do change.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's little things. It might be you come into it to an org and they're having retros, and in reality, it's just a blame game and not the, hey, we can learn. Those little things eat away at your culture, your morale, and you might have some bullies that you need to get under control. But those are important. They're vitally important to the health of your organization and ultimately the success of your people, you, and what you're trying to accomplish.
Cool. I'd love to try and wrap it up then. You can see if you can help me and figure out if I miss anything on the way through. We talked at the beginning about being clear about the changes that are coming up and the impact that those changes are going to have. We spoke about making the first changes to gain trust to start with, so that you bank that trust and use that for the harder changes that are inevitably going to come later on. We spoke about the fact that good change management comes from experience, and experience comes from having done change management to begin with. So make changes. Don't be scared of making changes, I think was the key point there. The last one, which you highlighted very nicely with your traveling around is celebrating successful changes and highlight them to the rest of the company. And then when change gets too much, slow down the rate of change, make a deliberate plateau in the rate of change and use that to help the change stick and embed before you then go on to the next bits. And we said, get to good enough to accomplish the goals of the business. Focus on making lives better, not on change for change's sake. I think it's fairly, almost quite obvious, that one, but I think it's something that you can get lost in when you're in that mode of making changes.
Absolutely, especially even as engineers. I think I don't code anymore, but I'm sure you experience this. You go into a class or something and it works perfectly fine. It's bugging you and you want to change it because it's not how you think it should be, or it's going to, or you can improve it that make some incremental improvement that will be nothing to the overall processing or software. It's that same kind of thing. You got to spend your time where it matters.
Yeah. Put your time where it's going to count. And then finally, we spoke about focusing on the culture of change in an organization. Did I miss anything else? We went through your playbook there.
I think that's great. We covered a lot, and I hope people find it useful and helpful to some degree.
To be honest, I think it's one of those things where a lot of people start off with change, especially when they've been doing some change, and they've always miss out one bit somewhere because change is, as you said at the beginning, it's complicated and it's big. So being able to distill it down to something like this hopefully will be very valuable. Kevin, if you could sort of give one piece of advice to somebody who's relatively new to the CTO role, what would that be?
It's not about the technology. Again, all these roles change, and depending, you might be in a 3-person startup and you're the CTO, and then it is about the technology. But if you are in an org where you have teams reporting to you, it's not about your technology savvy. Yeah, you want your teams to know that you know what you're talking about, but it's about being a multiplier. It's about being and empowering them. It's about supporting them and serving them to make things happen.
Brilliant words. Kevin, it's been fabulous having you on. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they get hold of you?
LinkedIn. Please reach out. I'm always happy to talk to people and have interesting conversations. So yeah, the best place to reach me is on LinkedIn.
Brilliant. There you go. LinkedIn is the universal place. We'll make sure we've got a link to that in the show notes. And if you found today's episode valuable, then please visit the website for the CTO Playbook and join the community to access even more resources and support for your CTO journey. Kevin, thanks so much for having me.
For having me, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you are listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.